Scully. We'll be right there. That was Detective Manners. He said they just found your bleeping UFO.
Hi, everybody. That little soundbite is from the Season 3 episode of The X-Files, Jose Chung's From Outer Space, which is still one of the very best hours of sci-fi television ever made. Welcome back to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love. Brought to you by Captain Geek and the Dark Nerd. I'm your Captain Will.
And I'm your nerd, Jess.
Welcome back to the podcast. This will be the first episode that we have recorded in over a month. So we're getting started here with season two, and I just want to welcome everybody back. We took some time off because I actually had a new baby. Well, you know, my wife did most of the work, but we had a new baby. And
congratulations.
Thank you, Dark Nerd Jess. But yeah, we had to take some time off to take care of that. And
to not sleep.
Yes, we had to take some time off and not sleep, basically. So we're back now. And today we're talking about UFOs and aliens. Specifically, specifically, we're going to discuss something you might have missed in the news recently. Not politics, something kind of weird. It's the fact that Congress, just last month, received briefings from the Department of Defense about increased UFO activity over the United States. This is related to the secretive government program, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, kind of the spiritual successor to Project Blue Book. And this new one was established a little over 10 years ago to study UFOs, or as they like to call it now, unidentified aerial phenomena, or UAPs. So then, after we talk a little bit about that, we're going to move on to discuss Bob Lazar, Area 51 and Flying Saucers, which is a really excellent documentary on Netflix, no matter what your views on UFOs are, by the way. It was just a really compelling documentary, which surprised me. I thought it was going to be kind of, you know, tinfoil hat stuff, but for the most part, it really wasn't. It was pretty serious, so it was neat. We're going to talk about that. Now, after that, we're going to get into some recent, the recent Storm Area 51 craze, and a few, it's going to be great, and a few comments about the debunked, but I think fascinating, Black Knight conspiracy. Then, finally, we want to talk about our favorite movies and books that feature aliens and UFOs, which we will wholeheartedly recommend to you. I don't think it would be a Mecha Dragon podcast without at least one reference to a movie or a TV show or something.
Right, exactly.
So, okay, so why don't we start and just talk about our personal beliefs, and I actually have a story about a UFO, but why don't you start? Jess, what are your personal beliefs about aliens and UFOs?
Well, let's see. I kind of got into the aliens theories in the early 90s, you know, as a young teenager. And it was fascinating. I think everyone spends some time thinking about it in their own way. And I think I used to have a lot more faith that we would see aliens, we would find alien life, we would make contact, and yada yada yada. And for years, there were all the documentaries on TV and magazines. My wife was really into it. She had a subscription to Alien Magazine. I can't remember the name of it. She joined an alien hunter club, all sorts of stuff. So for years, I've just been inundated with everything, and I saw all the videos and all the theories and all the conspiracies. And then as time goes on, it's like with technology, kind of is changing my view on not the existence per se, but the fact of us ever contacting alien life in our lifetime, you know, anytime soon. Because you always see all the videos of stuff of the green man or the gray man in the bush. Someone has a real old grainy
in the bush
video in a bush. Yeah, aliens in the bush,
like hiding
out in the wild.
In the wilds?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's a million videos where you see this. It looks like an alien body, but it looks like it was filmed with the very first camera ever made.
Okay.
And these days, I think if there was any sort of legitimate activity, there would be, you know, 15,000 iPhones pointing at the sky recording it. Mm. You know, you'd have it. You'd have such a good... so many angles on it, you could, like, record it in bullet time, like from The Matrix, you know.
Interesting.
You see it from 360 degrees, because everyone's walking around with a camera in their pocket these days, not like they were before. And still, even on the shows, all the new videos you see are all old. You know, there's nothing new, nothing with clear video or anything, no high res. And if it is... it hits the internet, and then the next day someone's deconstructing the video and showing how it's been, you know, this part's copy and pasted here, and it's all computer generated.
Well, maybe the aliens just realized that we all have iPhones and Android phones with cameras, and they're just staying away from those places.
Put a detour up on the internet.
Or they've just activated their cloaking drives. I mean, you know, who knows, right? Okay,
because they have technology that can tell when they're being filmed. Yeah, like I said, I think it'd be great to make contact in our lifetime. I really don't see it happening.
Well, in terms of contact, I would say that if indeed any of these UFO sightings, you know, that have happened over the past like 50, 60, 70 years or whatever are indeed true, then that means that they are aware of us and they have just chosen to not contact us.
Possibly.
Or, you know, I guess... it's possible they contacted like some small governmental group or something, but I don't really buy that.
And yeah, it's like I believe in aliens more than I believe in Jesus and God and all that, and I sadly don't think I'm ever going to see either.
So specifically then, okay, you're saying you believe that aliens exist somewhere somehow, but
I think statistically it has to be a fact.
But are they responsible for any UFO sightings, you know, that we might be aware of? Or is that, in your opinion, unrelated? I'm just wondering where you fall on that.
Well, there have been so many different sightings over the years. And, like, there will be, like, two or three that kind of line up and describe the same sort of thing. You know, the description of the ship, the description...
I don't know. I think it's actually more consistent than that, but do go on.
And it's just like, you know, everyone says, oh, it's saucer-shaped, oh, it's cigar-shaped, oh, it's triangular, oh, it's this. There's just a lot of too many different things, and it's like, are there really that many aliens that have all these different kind of technology and ships? They're just coming up, well, we got the new 2019 model. We're going to swing by Earth today and check it out.
You know, you're right. Humans, when they make their vehicles, they all look exactly the same. I mean, a car, a battleship, submarine.
It's true.
Yeah, they all look the same.
Yep.
No, I see your point. So, but
it's either they have everything completely different or there's... literally thousands of different alien races that we are in close proximity with.
So are you then saying that you don't think any of these UFOs are actually aliens? Is that what you're saying?
I haven't seen anything yet that has enough conclusive evidence that has really made me a believer. So, you know, reignited my belief,
So you're saying aliens must exist somewhere somehow, but they probably don't have anything to do with these UFO sightings that people have been talking
about. Yeah, I think statistically speaking, you know, it's a 1 in 75 quadrillion chance that we're here.
It's a very specific number.
Yes. I don't even know how many zeros it is or how to spell it. But there has to be life of some form out there. Mm-hmm. There just has to be. And everyone's always like, well, maybe this is an alien ship. What makes us think it's the type of alien life form that needs a ship,
right?
You know, for interstellar travel?
Right.
And maybe it's just amorphous blobs or sentient gas clouds. You know, it could be any sort of thing that feeds off of...
sentient gas clouds, by the way, were featured in Arthur C. Clarke's Odyssey series, which starts with 2001, which of course is a movie. So eventually they find that there are gaseous life forms in Jupiter. which I'm sure is not actually the case, although we don't really know. Okay, so interesting. My personal beliefs are that UFOs exist, but we must remember that the U stands for unidentified, which means we don't actually know what they are. You know, maybe some of them are aliens. I don't know how likely that actually is. But, you know, my belief is that at least a significant portion of them are simply terrestrial, like, experimental aircraft, right? So maybe the U.S. Air Force was testing out some crazy stuff. I mean, there are pictures of, like, you know, way back when they were testing the stealth fighters and the stealth bombers, like, people would take pictures and be like, ooh, what's that? You know, and it turned out later, way later, you know, they revealed, oh, well, yeah, that was actually them testing the stealth aircraft.
Yeah, that's the F-14.
Right. But there's definitely, there are definitely other ones, other UFOs and UAPs that we have no explanation for. And I think it's really fascinating. So I do have a story of my own about a UFO, because when I was a kid, I saw one. And I, to this day, cannot explain it. And I remember it so vividly. I was, you know, I've always had a problem falling asleep. And when I was a kid, I must have been like 9 years old or something. You know, I couldn't sleep and I went, got up and I found my dad and he decided that, you know, we were going to make it like a camp out. And so we went out into the backyard and he like put up a tent. And so that was like a nice, you know, thing that my dad did. But while he was putting up the tent and like pounding the stakes into the ground, I remember looking up into the sky and there was this thing up there. And it was moving very, very slowly across the sky. I'm really not sure how big it was because it was hard to tell like how far away it was.
Right.
But it definitely had to be sizable. It was shaped like an octagon, except longer than it was tall. So like a squished stop sign type of a shape.
Huh.
And it had its surface was separated into like vertical columns that each column was like a different color of light. So you can kind of imagine.
What time of day was this?
It was in the middle of the night.
Middle of the night.
It must have been, you know, at least 10, 11 p.m., if not later than that.
So it was basically giving off its own light.
It was totally self-illuminating. Silent. It was totally just silent. Like it was moving so slowly that it was almost like a hover. And it had these different colors, like spinning around it, like on its surface, and it didn't make any sound at all. I don't know what the heck it was. It definitely wasn't a helicopter or a plane. It wasn't a blimp. I know that some blimps, you know, can put like colors and things on the sides, but it was shaped like an octagon. I'm pretty sure they don't make blimps in the octagon shape.
Right.
That was just really interesting. I'm not saying it's impossible to make a balloon in that shape. I'm saying they don't make blimps in that shape. So anyways, that's stayed with me over the years because I simply can't explain it. Now, I'm not here to tell you today that, oh, I believe that was definitely aliens, but I don't know what the heck it could have been.
It was a UFO. There's no doubt about that.
It was a UFO. Absolutely. So I also, like you, believe that aliens must exist somewhere in the universe. I mean, I just think that when you consider how much space there actually is, how big the universe is, you know, and now we know from the Kepler mission that most stars have multiple planets around them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's nuts. So just statistically speaking, there's got to be something out there. Yeah, I just don't
know. There has to be another. And, you know, the Goldilocks planets, you know, planets that have
In the Goldilocks zone that are in a distance from the star where liquid water on the surface is possible, yes.
Right, and again, that takes us back to why are we assuming that all alien life requires H2O?
Because the only life we know of does. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And there's a lot of chemical properties of water that make it really favorable for life processes at the cellular level.
And also, even if there are planets with water that could sustain human life, who's to say that the aliens couldn't live in a much harsher environment that could not sustain human life.
Well, they could. I mean, they could.
Could be
we don't,
fire beasts.
You know, any aliens that may be out there, we don't know anything about them except that they might mm-hmm. be out there. They could be based on a totally different chemistry. They might not be intelligent. They might be intelligent but not have an industrial, you know, civilization. They may have no interest in space exploration. They may live on a planet with gravity that's strong enough that they're not really able to even send anything into orbit, at least
right.
with any technology that we understand. So, you know, there's like an infinite number of variables, but I just think it's interesting. So I think we need to
they
now...
They could be inside the moon right now.
They could
looking
be
at
inside.
Us.
You know, there could also be, you know, a secret cult of Nazis inside the moon that escaped there after the end of World War II,
oh, yeah.
like in the movie... What's that movie on Netflix called? It's called Iron Sky.
Okay.
The Nazis set up a secret base on the dark side of the moon in 1945 where they hide out and plan to return to Earth and conquer it. Okay.
See, there you go.
So, all Perfect. Right. So on that note, we definitely need to move on. So
right.
I just wanted to talk about this advanced aerospace threat identification program because recently, you know, and anybody listening to this could be forgiven for not noticing this in the news recently because it was such kind of a blip in the news cycle. But really the important thing is that in June of this year, actually it was Wednesday, June 19th, 2019, three senators, I believe in the Intelligence Committee, got a classified briefing on UFOs or UAPs. So a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be saying, I'm going to be either paraphrasing or quoting directly from a number of articles that I read, including from Politico, The Independent, CNN. But Navy officials did indeed meet with interested congressional members and staffers that Wednesday to provide a classified brief on efforts to understand and identify these threats to the safety and security of our aviators. And that was a quote from spokesman Lieutenant Commander Daniel Day. Follow-up discussions with other interested staffers were also scheduled for the day after that Thursday, the 20th of June this year. And they said Navy officials will continue to keep interested congressional members and staff informed. They went on to say that, you know, the discussions are classified, so they're not going to comment on specific information. Somebody else, another intelligence official, added that more requests for briefings are coming in. I think it was that same person said people are coming out of the woodwork and there's just like growing congressional interest in this now because there have been basically it seems like the DOD, Department of Defense, has decided to give them these briefings because there's been increased activity. And it's concerning because a lot of these unidentified aircraft, the Navy has said there have been a number of reports of unauthorized and or unidentified aircraft entering various military-controlled ranges and designated airspace in recent years. So it's like they're hovering over important stuff, and so it's concerning because we don't know what they are.
Well, I think another way to look at it is it's concerning because it's very similar to the stuff we're developing, and... We think the enemy might be kind of on the same trajectory with their developments, and we want to be able to block them before they can block us.
That might be true to some degree, but a lot of what these sources are saying is that the troubling thing is not that these things resemble technology that we're developing, but that the technology is so vastly beyond what we
right.
understand in terms of the laws of aerodynamics and just the laws of physics that if... there was a concerted effort by like large numbers of these crafts, whatever they are, to do us harm, there'd be nothing we could do about it.
Right.
So what is the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program? I do have some juicy details. So for years...
Space Force.
This program investigated reports of UFOs, according to Defense Department officials, interviews with program participants, and records obtained by the New York Times. So I did source some of this from the New York Times. So this guy named Luis Elizondo ran the program. He's a military intelligence guy. He ran it on the fifth floor of the Pentagon's C-ring deep in the Pentagon. Now, there are some incidents that have been made public. There were a lot of pilots who reported seeing these objects on an almost daily basis from the summer of 2014 to March of 2015 while they were flying their, you know, their Navy jets down the East Coast. Some of these were even captured on video. So it was sort of after this and pressure that came after that, that the Navy recently announced that it created a procedure for pilots to formally report these incidents. Because a lot of times previously, people have talked about how they wouldn't even come forward because they would just get laughed out of the room by people that weren't there. Right.
Right.
So now, since it's kind of concerning, they have created a process for them to actually get accurate reporting on this. And one of the pilots, Lieutenant Ryan Graves, who was an FA-18 Super Hornet pilot with like 10 years experience, he said, "These things would be out there all day. Keeping an aircraft in the air requires a significant amount of energy. With the speeds we observed, 12 hours in the air is 11 hours longer than we would expect." So that's interesting. So there, one of the incidents on footage, and you can look this up online, but in 2004, they called it the Tic Tac incident because the object looked kind of like a Tic Tac. Pilot David Fravor, November 14th, 2004, was flying on the East Coast, or I'm sorry, on the California coast, the West Coast. He said it was a clear day, you know, no wind, it was a blue sky. Suddenly, you know, this thing appears and he caught it on video and he's like, you know, talking about in the recording how he's really weirded out by it and like, what the heck is that? And apparently, now he said this, there's this great news segment that Vice did where he talks about it. And he said, you know, a couple weeks before this incident that he got on tape, they had been tracking objects like this up to 10 at a time. They would come down from about 80,000 feet, hang out at about 20,000 feet for a few hours, and then go straight back up. And they would be going incredibly fast, defying the laws of physics, you know, moving around the aircraft. And it was pretty freaky.
Sounds like a pretty genius marketing ploy by the folks at Tic Tac, huh?
Yeah.
Trying to sell some more Tic Tacs.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that's what it is. It's just all a deep Tic Tac conspiracy.
Brilliant.
The big breath mint lobby. Anyway, in 2015, there were some similar stories for F-18 pilots operating off the East Coast, like from Lake Virginia down to Florida. But in any case, this is all really concerning, right? And, you know, they started getting this stuff on the record. So what happened was, starting in about 2007, Harry Reid, who was a Democratic senator from Nevada, got together with a couple of other senators, Stevens and Inouye. Stevens is from Alaska, I believe, and Inouye was from Hawaii. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. And Stevens actually had remembered being tailed by a strange aircraft, you know, like a UFO when he was flying in World War II. And both of those guys are World War II vets who were just concerned about the national security implications. So they got together and they basically, they put an obscure appropriation for $22 million on this, you know, to establish this program, the AATIP, to investigate this. And the reason that they did it that way is because they didn't want a public debate on the Senate floor about UFOs. So they just put it in. And a lot of the money went to Bigelow Aerospace, which is this company owned by billionaire entrepreneur Robert Bigelow. He believes in aliens. He purchased the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah, which has a lot of UFO lore and stories associated with it. There's a book online.
Area 52.
Yeah, something like that. But he purchased that. His company is also currently working with NASA to produce expandable craft for humans to use in space. So he's not, you know, it's not like a crackpot like little company, you know, sitting somewhere. So anyways, that's just kind of how it got started. They hired subcontractors, solicited research. There were also, you know, governmental agencies working on it. They modified buildings in Las Vegas for storage of metal alloys and other materials that this guy Elizondo and other contractors have said were recovered from UFOs or UAPs. They studied people who claimed that they had experienced physical effects from encounters with these things. They spoke with military people who had reported the sightings. They collected video and audio recordings and other records of these things happening. So that's all the public information that I've been able to find as to like what they did, what this program did. Now, what they found was apparently a lot. There's like tons of unexplained sightings by Navy pilots and other observers of aircraft with capabilities far beyond what is currently considered possible in any way.
Right.
Now, this guy, Elizondo, who used to run this whole program, told Politico that these sightings were very often reported near nuclear facilities, whether we're talking about power plants or like nuclear-powered ships at sea. He said they never seen anything like it.
They never hang out in the Walmart parking lot, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now, in 2009, Senator Reid argued for heightened security to protect the program. He wanted, you know, the information to be more restricted. He wanted, you know, more money. But essentially, because they didn't make a whole lot of headway in terms of actually uncovering, like, exactly what they were and how they worked, in, like, 2012, they stopped funding it. But Elizondo says that the work went on with the rest of the funding that they had, and they just, you know, worked with officials from the Navy and the CIA. And, you know, eventually he actually resigned in protest October 2017 because he said there was too much secrecy. People weren't taking it seriously enough, basically. Now, after that, he said that they did name a successor for his position, but he didn't name who that actually was because it still operates kind of secretly. Getting through this as fast as I can. But I mean, like, so far, like, what are your thoughts about this program?
It'd be great to, you know, have them be a little more public and open with all the stuff they're finding and make it more easily accessible to the mainstream. I think if aliens are a thing, it's kind of like the Flat Earth conspiracy that everyone has reasons for why the government would lie about it, why they keep it from us.
That one makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, but it's like they do the same thing with the aliens, and it's like that's the single most, the biggest thing that could ever happen to humanity is find, you know, contact with another.
Yeah, and we'll get into the Bob Lazar thing in a minute, but like one of his things is it's like, look, it's a crime that the public hasn't been informed about the fact that these things exist, you know, and if that's all true, I would tend to agree with him. Now, so like, why is this all important? Well, you know, do we really want UFOs, whatever they are, right? Basically aircraft that are so far advanced in relation to the technology that we understand, that we have no countermeasure against them. Like, do we want tons of them, like, hovering around our nuclear power plants and nuclear-powered, like, naval ships and, you know, just, like, doing circles around our like, most advanced aircraft and stuff? Is it really a good idea to not, to continue to, like, be ignorant about, like, what they even are? I don't know if it is. There's actually this company now, the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, which was co-founded by Tom DeLonge, who was in Blink-182, and he's like this big entertainment mogul now. But basically, he founded this organization, and they have contacted a whole bunch of what they've said on their website is they've mobilized a team of the most experienced, connected, and passionately curious minds from the U.S. intelligence community, including the CIA, Department of Defense, who have been operating under the shadows of top secrecy for decades. So that includes Mr. Elizondo, who we've been talking about, who ran this program, AATIP, Chris Mellon, former Democratic staff member, director for the Senate Intelligence Committee, and former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, former high-level CIA officials, former Director of Advanced Systems at Lockheed Martin Super Secret Skunk Works facility in California. So, you know, among their names, they have some heavy hitters there. And right now they're seeking investors. They've already raised over $2 million. You know, and Elizondo made this point that, like, if a Russian bomber comes in near to California or, like, flies over, like, a nuclear power plant, that would be all over the news.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That would be huge. But these things happen and, like, nobody says anything. That's bad. Now, again, it's possible that some UFO sightings are our own experimental aircraft, but it seems weird that they would have a $22 million program to investigate it, and that you would have high-level, like, naval officials freaking out if it was something of ours, right? You would think that at some point somebody would come to them and be like, look, don't worry about it. I can't tell you anything, but we got this, you know. But that doesn't seem to be what's happened.
You got nothing to worry about.
Yeah. Here. So in closing, okay, as to why this stuff is at least concerning. Now, I'm not gonna sit here and claim that, oh, it's definitely aliens with big eyes and green, you know, gray skin or little green men or whatever. Who knows? You know, it could be extra dimensional beings. It could be
right.
Things that live here with us on Earth that we can't perceive for some reason. It could be a million things. We don't even know enough to be asking the right questions, in my opinion, right now. Which is why right. Programs like this are so important. But so anyway, I want to leave us with a clip from Luis Elizondo about what they found. I mean, he said they found a lot. And he's also going to explain that this is not just a couple sightings of like a couple pilots that might be crazy. So I'm going to go ahead and play that clip, which was from a CNN interview that Luis Elizondo did on December 19th, 2017.
But do you believe, you know, when you get that Navy pilot saying what he said, do you think that that was, you know, a UFO? To obviously, I don't have any other word to use, or that, well, or something else?
Sure, that's a great question. Keeping in mind, it's not just the pilot's testimony on an observation. Sure, when someone comes to you who's in charge of a multi-million dollar weapon platform, who maintains a top secret security clearance, who is paid and trusted by this country to go fight wars, and to fly over cities with live munitions. And by the way, they're trained observers with millions of dollars invested in their training.
Yep.
I would submit to you it's pretty compelling. But on top of that, it's not just the eyewitness testimony. It is actual electro-optical data and radar returns. It's also people like radar operators and air traffic controllers. So I think the discussion should be maybe a little bit broader than that. I think people are focusing just on two videos coming from a set of F-18s when really it's a lot more than that.
So, okay, you know, I think that's all really interesting and compelling, and I just want to get your thoughts on that, Jess. Like, what do you think about this program and everything that we've just covered?
Well, I think you covered it and nailed it real good. You know, it's like, why shouldn't we have more information about? It's great to have a program that's out there looking into these things, but I think, like I said before, it's just, I just want more interactivity with the public, you know? I think discovering true alien life forms would send society into a couple of different spirals.
Are we ready for that? I mean, seriously, as a civilization, are we ready for that?
I mean, it would certainly be interesting to see what all the religious folk do, regardless of which religion they prescribe to, that it could very well be the end of the world.
Religious concerns, religious beliefs, you know, the rise of fake news, you know, the rise of like increased political polarization. You know, it goes back to this. I think this is an argument that, you know, people have been having, or a debate that people have been having ever since, you know, this existence of aliens has been speculated, is like, okay, if the government does know that for sure, whether it's because they found something, you know, they found little green men in Roswell in that crash, or they, you know, were contacted by aliens in the past and, you know, working with them, whatever it is it really, is it really a good idea to release that information to the public? And, you know, because not everybody's even going to believe it, even if it is true, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so then,
fake news.
Does that actually work against the government and make them seem like crackpots, you know? I don't know. I tend to think that, you know, we're not ready for a lot of our existing technological breakthroughs that we have as a civilization in general. Whereas, like, this would be, you know, this
Oh, we can't even handle Tide Pods. We can't even handle Tide Pods right now. What are we going to do with aliens?
Tide Pods, yeah. Now, there is another angle to this that might be the most likely scenario of all. Obviously, the vast majority of the information about these crafts is highly classified. And it seems reasonable that the Navy or the Department of Defense or whatever would be working very hard to control the narrative around all the details that have gone public. So consider that all the buzz around the recent congressional hearings could be following exactly the narrative that they want to be in the news, which is to say that a lot of information is being withheld in a very strategic way to keep speculation focused away from the full truth, right? So,
which is the Jimmy Hoffa investigation, right?
Obviously, that's obviously what this entire podcast episode has been getting at is Jimmy Hoffa. Right. But no, but some people would say that, of course, that's true. They're covering up the existence of aliens, but that's not what I'm saying. So I recently, both of us recently watched a video by Professor Simon Holland, who dug up a really strange patent application that was submitted by the U.S. Navy on April 28th, 2016. A patent application that was denied, by the way, and Professor Holland found further information on this from the Navy's patent attorney, where the Navy revealed some really surprising information in these documents that are now public record because they had to submit them to, like, the court. So long story short,
Can I interject real quick? That's really cool because in the video they do show, you know, however much you can believe, little snippets of the pages of these applications and patents, whatever.
And I actually looked them up in the patent office, and you can actually view them online. So continue.
Yeah, and it's funny because the dates are like March of 2018. There's 2017, 2016. So it's really, you know, most people don't think like there's scientists and stuff at work on this alien stuff. But if you look at that, it's like this is going on all the time. There is literally a whole faction of the government / scientists that are actively, constantly working on this stuff, and no one ever hears much about it. So.
It's crazy, cool. Right? So, long story short, the patent application is for a craft that if you look at the diagrams in some of these patent applications, it's kind of like an oval or an egg-shaped craft with, and it specifies this, a next-gen gravity-based propulsion system that supposedly allows it to move through air, water, and space in exactly the way that these UFOs or UAPs have been described. So when the patent office denied the Navy's application, the Navy's patent attorney submitted a bunch of paperwork to the court to appeal the decision. And in that paperwork, they claimed that the design was not ridiculous and it should not be denied because the Navy already had working craft built using this design. So one implication of this is that this so-called Tic Tac UAP sighting was actually one of these super secret government owned craft. So, and that was the Tic Tac incident was in 2004. Similar objects were sighted in 2014 and 2015. Then, lo and behold, in 2016, the Navy files for this patent.
Tic Tacs are real, people.
Tic Tacs are real. So, what the hell is going on? We don't actually know what the senators were told in that briefing that we talked about a little earlier. We only know what they told us publicly. And if it's true that the government has developed this breakthrough new propulsion system, I can see how it would be kept classified at absolutely the highest levels, as in keep the president out of it so he can have plausible deniability level of secrecy even, which means there's no way they'd just tell random Navy pilots. I mean, the effects of this kind of breakthrough would change the world. I mean, travel, space travel, more, you know?
Right. And I think, you know, if anyone was given the option to tell our current president, they'd be like, no, he cannot know this because he'll slip up and say something stupid. Like Space Force.
This actually might be information coming out that's going to lead to more announcements about the Space Force. I mean, who knows?
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. And there are the videos, the snippets of the videos they showed of the Navy or Air Force, I can't remember which, pilots interacting with the Tic Tac, you know, and they don't know what it is. And
they don't.
It's kind of weird because they're part of the government and the guys developing the Tic Tac and using it are part of the government. So
they're probably not even talking to each other and maybe testing these flights with this thing.
Well, it would have to be. I mean, you bring up a good point because this all begs the question, then why would they fly these things around our conventional aircraft and nuclear site and, you know, nuclear facilities right. and freak out a bunch of pilots and radar operators and flight controllers and everything?
Yeah, you'd think that would be more risky.
Well, I don't know the answer to that. However, it occurred to me that that could be part of the tests when they're testing out these new propulsion systems, you know, to test them against the flight capabilities of our best planes and pilots, maybe. Can we hold on just a second? There is a really loud plane going by. I'm not 100% certain whether my microphone is picking it up, but...
Are you sure it's a plane? Well, you never know. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. Okay.
You got to get a little paranoid when we're talking about this stuff.
Yeah, I know, right? Know. Okay.
So, right.
And this kind of begs another question, right? So why now? Why release this footage now? I mean... This is the first UFO footage ever released by the U.S. government. I mean, you've seen plenty of, like, videos that various people have taken throughout the years, right? But this is the first video that's actually been released by the government.
Yeah, I've read transcripts of, you know, pilots, you know, their recordings, you know, from the towers, what they recorded. The pilots going, what the hell is that? And, you know, they're describing what they're seeing and following. But never before has there been actual video.
Yeah, and not only is it video, but it's like video from fighter jets.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just some jackass on the ground with a camcorder, you know. It's
Yeah,
like,
with a little drone flying something around right? at 2.5 miles an hour. I mean, these guys are keeping pace with fighter jets.
Right, and I think there's another puzzle piece here, possibly. So this private company that I mentioned earlier, the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, now, why is it now getting started and looking for investors? Could you imagine if a company got set up in the 1970s or even the 90s with its stated mission to research recovered UFO hardware and replicate their physics-defying propulsion systems? That company would crash and burn, pun intended.
Right.
It would be a laughing stock. Yeah. So how is the company going to become profitable now? So in that video, Professor Holland is convinced that this information is starting to slowly drip out into the public to prepare it for announcements that the U.S. government and maybe other governments like Russia or China have this technology now. Now, if that's the case, the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, which, remember, employs a bunch of people who have had access to this classified info for years, is right. poised to become like the next gen Boeing or Lockheed Martin or something. Could they right. be getting set up to produce a bunch of these new crafts for profits of a level heretofore never seen? You might want to invest.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I don't know. Is that a going to be a publicly traded company, or are they still going to try and...
Well, I think I mentioned earlier, maybe I didn't, but I think I mentioned earlier that they're currently seeking investors for like a right. certain amount per share. Maybe it was like $100 or $200 per share or something like that. And they've already raised at least $2 million that way.
Well, if we can find a way to cultivate marijuana on the moon or other planets, that would be a great investment, I think. But yeah, that's real interesting that they're coming open with that. And it's not like these are just some yahoos in a trailer park somewhere thinking this up, saying, hey, I can sell a funnel that you stick in your butt on YouTube or on eBay, and it can be called a fart extractor, and people will buy it for $12. These are like legitimate businessmen, and I would assume they have a bevy of scientists.
Well, and legitimate disposal. Intelligence officials and former military intelligence officials, and so maybe they're all still required to keep to this, cover story that like, oh, it's actually recovered UFO parts that we're researching and stuff. But maybe what they're doing regardless of how the what the genesis was of like this technology, maybe what they're actually doing is setting up a company to start, I don't know if mass producing is the right word, but to really start a production pipeline for these type of next gen crafts. If right. they're, if indeed, you know, Professor Holland is right and there's soon going to be announcements and stuff like that. So anyway, it seems crazy, right? But in a lot of ways, it also kind of seems like the more likely option by orders of magnitude. Now,
yeah,
I think I kind of mentioned how they made these breakthroughs is another matter entirely. Did they recover actual UFOs and reverse engineer the systems? Bob Lazar might claim that's the case. Did the government reverse engineer something they found that was left behind by like a previous ancient civilization on Earth? Or was the tech just developed solely by humans under super secret conditions over several decades? I mean, the theories behind how these things might work have been around since at least 1962, which is, I'm talking about the video referenced Robert L. Forward's Guidelines to Anti-Gravity paper out of the Hughes Research Laboratories. I don't know. But inexplicable UFOs would be a great narrative to cover up a next-gen propulsion research program.
Right. It's cool. Like, they described the propulsion of the Tic Tac, as we'll call it. What was it? It was, what did they call it?
Gravity drive?
It was like gravity vacuum or something like that?
Oh, well, yeah, he gets into some of the details from the patent applications, and you can go online and read these patent applications.
Yeah, but it repels the water or air particles in front of it.
Well, it was like, the way it's described is it works on a quantum level where it creates like a quantum vacuum in front of it, so it just sort of like sucks itself forward through, you know, space, regardless of what.
Yeah, so regardless of size or weight or anything like that. And yeah, that's pretty cool. And I'd like to find out if something like that is actually possible. But if they're, you know, putting in patents for it, they might have, as he mentions in the video, cracked it.
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing. You could see why they would want to keep it super secret. You know, and maybe the breakthrough that allowed them to really get the program going has been, you know, the discovery of, you know, room temperature superconductors, which there have been a couple breakthroughs in that field in the news in the last couple of years.
Is this just them trying to find a way to get around gas prices? You know, maybe they're just developing this quantum vacuum to go somewhere without any fuel or need for propulsion.
One assumes that this research program cost more than, you know, a few barrels of gasoline.
But never have to buy fuel again.
It's a good point, savings. Exactly. If you ever never have to buy fuel again, I mean, that's
I mean,
that's
I haven't huge. Paid for a haircut since I was like 17. I look great. And I'm just living off of all the money I haven't spent.
But, you know, it is actually a really good, you know, this, that makes me wonder too, is that another reason for the secrecy? Because if suddenly you have a propulsion method that is going to upend the world economy, you know, the world fuel economy, which is basically based on oil and other fossil fuels,
think about what that would do for the military. I mean, if you could power, I mean, obviously it would take a quadruple gazillions of dollars to build this technology, I would assume, and install it on all the jets and tanks and, you know, aircraft carriers. But just think about it.
Yeah. It would provide our military with even more commanding, you know, dominance of the skies. Or
and who
underwater.
Knows how, what the yeah, who knows what speed this thing is capable of reaching.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean,
yeah, it'd be crazy.
If it's true, then, you know, we're on the cusp of something amazing. And again, I don't know whether, you know, it came from aliens or something else, you know, but it's,
I know. I think with the way technology itself is expanding and, you know, our knowledge is growing. I mean, look at 100 years ago where we were, you know, cars were just kind of getting nice. Now we've got planes, we got jets, we got submarines, we got this and that. And there's just so much stuff that's,
yeah,
you know, it's expanding exponentially.
We could be due for a paradigm shifting major discovery, you know? Who knows?
Yeah, and it might even be a big hoax. There might not be any aliens or spacecraft, but technology on its own is gonna progress to the point where it's beyond anything we could even imagine.
Yeah.
And that could happen in the next 15, 20 years at this rate.
Yeah.
You know. Or less.
But I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's a perspective worth considering in all this. And we'll just have to see, you know, if any further information shakes out.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff.
It's interesting to think about. So let's move on to Bob Lazar and Area 51. So can you explain this movie, this documentary?
It's funny that you ask me that because I still have not seen it.
Are you kidding me?
I did.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. Jesus. I've been a bastard, I know.
Okay, all right.
But I did listen to, he just did last month in June, he did an interview on the Joe Rogan Experience, which a few of you might have heard of. And he basically went through his story, and Bob Lazar is a guy that has worked at Area 51, and he was working on, he claims, all sorts of, like, power... What do you call
alien
it?
Alien spacecraft power sources.
Alien spacecraft propulsion. Power sources and stuff. That's the word I was looking for. And he's kind of the reason we all are familiar with the term Area 51. It's
right.
More of a household name these days.
Right.
Because he came out, I don't even know.
He came forward in 1989. Year. So this is basically what the documentary is basically about, his story and him coming forward and all the stuff that he's claiming and whether or not it's true. That's kind of what the documentary is preoccupied with. And, you know, at first, like, you know, we've already talked about what we believe is, like, you know, I'm not convinced that, you know, an alien crashed in Roswell in the 40s. And I'm not convinced that, you know, our government has, despite the many wonderful episodes of The X-Files, I am not convinced that our government, you know, is aware of actual aliens and has actual spacecraft. But I was really surprised by this documentary because basically he tells this story. You know, at first in 1989, when he came out with it, he came forward anonymously, right?
Right.
And so much information. But basically, you know, he claimed a lot of things. And oddly, you know, some of the stuff that he said checked out, like the existence of these bases. Like, he actually worked at one called, like, S4, I think it was called, which is really close to Area 51. And I think they are related to each other somehow. But Area 51 ends up being the one that we're all familiar with. Well, like, every so often, like, something else is declassified, you know, because he originally came out with this, like, 30 years ago.
Right.
And it just bolsters his case. And then, like, when official sources are saying, well, you can't trust him because, you know, maybe he didn't really go to this college, or he didn't really have this job, or he didn't really do this. Like, there's actually, the documentary actually goes through a lot of pieces of information that say, well, no, if you look into it, no, he actually did go to this college and he did do this and he did, and this is true. And these people that he mentioned before, well, we found them and interviewed them, and yeah, that was what their job was at that time. And
I want to see his birth certificate and his tax records now.
right. I'm sure he was born in Kenya or something. But no. So the thing is, though, the documentary really makes you think, because the guy actually has no discernible reason to make this stuff up, because he hasn't made any money out of it.
No.
What he's gotten out of it is people bugging him all the time and, you know, people constantly trying to discredit him and, like, all this stuff. He hasn't made any money.
Yeah, he says it basically ruined his life.
Yeah. Like, they asked him, like, if you could go back and do this again, would you? And he was like, no, probably not.
No.
Because not this... And he doesn't even like to talk about it anymore. So...
Yeah, he tries to stay to himself. And like you said, he hasn't made any money.
Yeah.
He's been in interviews and stuff like that. You know, everyone, he's just kind of a crackpot in most ways.
Well,
and
there was... Go ahead.
Well, you were talking about crackpot, so go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that he doesn't actually appear to be a crackpot, because he actually runs some type of laboratory I think in Nevada, and he, you know, he's got a scientific profession. He he's a smart guy. He's exactly the sort of guy that if you're the government and you get a hold of alien technology and you don't know how the hell it works, that you would call in, because he's a really think outside of the box kind of a guy.
Right.
Like he,
go get Bobby.
Like he tinkers in his garage and he like build his own motorcycle that like has like a rocket engine on the back and stuff. Like he's a real interesting guy. And I, and the rational part of me wants to say, well, he's obviously lying or delusional, but when you look at all this footage of him from the past 30 years, he does not seem to be delusional. He seems to be a very down-to-earth, like, reasonable sort of guy who doesn't have a reason to make any of this stuff up.
Right, and his story, you know, it's not like when he started getting the negative press and, you know, his life started going downhill from all the attention and stuff. His story never changed.
And then while they were but while they were filming this documentary, okay, the FBI raided his house. And it's crazy because there's this the camera guy or the filmmaker, you know, they go into the middle of the woods and they start taping, and he's like, you know, there's some stuff that I want to get on the record, like just in case. And the filmmaker assures him, he's like, look, we're the only two people here. This is only going to be on this like memory card in the camera, which is encrypted. And that's, and that, and like one other encrypted backup that's like in a safe in a secret location. Like it's the only places it's ever going to be. And you and I are the only ones that know about this. And then Bob Lazar said something like, well, I don't know how much they are monitoring me anymore, but, and he pulls out his phone. He's like, oh wait, let's take our phones and put them in this bag and like bury them in the ground. Like, you know, 20 feet over there, so that there's no way, you know, even on the off chance that like somebody's monitoring your phone, that they can hear this. Well, then they do that.
Strip naked, do the interview nude.
Right. But then they bury the phones. And then later, when the FBI are raiding his house, the FBI specifically referenced that conversation. Right.
That's crazy.
Nuts. So if he,
and really another thing, speaking on the FBI and all that, while he was still working at Area 51, you know, they put taps on his phone in his house and this and that. And they actually had transcripts of his wife having an affair, you know, because she was having an affair with some other guy, I can't remember. And it was like actually Area 51 that was putting the taps out. I don't know if they were using the FBI or what.
Interesting.
But they knew that his wife was having an affair for, I don't know how long it was. It might have been 6-9 months or something like that. It might have been more than a year. But it's like they finally came out and said, oh, by the way, we've been, you know, tapping your phone and this and that. And they tell him, yeah, your wife's been cheating on you this whole time. And it's like, ah.
Now,
so they want to keep their secrets. They'll go to any lengths.
It was a very a troubling documentary to watch, in the sense that it really challenges you in a very strong way your preconceptions of what's real and what's reasonable. Because, you know, if we're going to say that the things that he is saying are false, then what does that mean? That means that he is delusional in a way that nobody has been able to pick up on for 30 years, including the people that are closest to him, and that the only thing he gets out of it is some weird gratification of like being in the spotlight, except that he doesn't want to be in the spotlight.
Right.
So it doesn't really make any sense that he would make all this stuff up. Now, I tend to believe, after watching that, okay, and reading up a little bit on it, that he was involved in something super secret. I don't know that it was space aliens. Maybe it was.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. What goes on at Area 51?
Well, sure, but maybe it was just something really weird. You know, who knows what it was, but he was involved in something, or else there wouldn't be all this crazy stuff going on around him. And like, as part of the documentary, they're like, you know what? Just like last week, this news article came out where the government, the federal government, admitted that like they use these certain type of hand scanners in these secret military installations in this area. And it was this thing that he tried to describe like 30 years ago, and that everybody said he was a crackpot because he was just making it up, but he wasn't.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So when little details like that come out, and when like the FBI raids his house the day after he talks in a secret conversation in the middle of the woods to a filmmaker about something, right. You know, it makes you think. It really makes you think. So anyway, I would highly recommend that everybody listening to this podcast check out that movie. It, no matter whether you believe in aliens or not, it is just fascinating. And I love movies that...
It does sound interesting. I think I will
I you thought know, you had watched it before we started this podcast.
I'm the one that told you to watch it.
You are. Son of a gun.
Son of a bitch.
So, okay. So now that we've got... Do you have any other comments on Bob Lazar before we move on?
No, that's just one of the longest standing conspiracies around Area 51 and aliens. Like I said, he's pretty much the reason they have the little alien bar out near the
Area
51.
Oh, right,
that
whole tourist like industry, that cottage industry of all the alien stuff out near Roswell and in Nevada.
Yeah, when I was driving from Nevada back to Ohio, we went down near Vegas. And we went past, it wasn't near Area 51, but just that whole area, like 100 miles away from Area 51, you start seeing, you know, all the little shops, the truck stops on the side of the road are all aliens, you know, and you go in and it's just full of alien paraphernalia and Area 51 and this and that. And it's huge. And that's mostly because of him coming out with his story.
Mm-hmm.
And... like you said, it is something that just fascinating and makes you really think.
On that note, like actually the state senators in Nevada, they named Nevada's Route 375 as extraterrestrial mm-hmm. highway.
Right. Yeah, that's great.
You know, it is great. So anyhow, this movie.
And maybe it's just them also kind of, you know, tipping the hat to the fact that. You know, we're all about it being aliens, and then they all know for a fact that there's nothing going on at Area 51 that has anything to do with aliens.
I doubt the
aliens,
state senators know anything about what's inside a secret military installation there. But, you know, they were just capitalizing, I think, on that little cottage industry and trying to bring in more tourism to the state, which makes sense. It's fine. But this movie, I love it when movies challenge me and make me think, and this movie definitely did that. So wherever you stand on UFOs and aliens, I would really advise you to check out Bob Lazar, Flying Saucers, and Area 51 on Netflix.
It might just change your mind, and you can join us in the nerd world.
It is some serious food for thought, if nothing else. So speaking of Area 51, let's talk about storming Area 51.
Yeehaw!
So why don't you give us the introduction to that?
Oh, let's see. I'm not even sure exactly how it started, but apparently there's this big idea that I'm assuming rednecks or whatever are going to band together and they're just going to storm Area 51. You know, as civilians, I certainly hope they don't show up with assault weapons and their grenades and all of their homemade pipe bombs and stuff to try and fight their way in. I'm sure that, I don't know what the count's up to today. I'm just July 5th, 2019. There's things that said 53,000 people have pledged to storm Area 51.
It's over 3 million at this point.
Yeah. It's just growing by steps and bounds, leaps and bounds every day. And I'm sure a good portion of the people that signed the petition or whatever did it in a joking manner.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guarantee at least 25% of those people are gearing up.
Yeah, oh my God. I am going to wait to see what happens on September 20th this year. But so here's how it began, okay? So it was created as a Facebook event.
Right.
And it just quickly went viral and people just started, you know, saying that they were going to go. And we're up to, like I said, I think it's over like 3 million people have responded that they're going interested at this point. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. So 1.9 million going, 1.4 million interested.
Interested.
Yeah.
They'll just be the ones setting up the lawn chairs and stuff.
And so it was definitely set up as a joke. okay? It was definitely set up as a joke. It says, the details say, we will all meet up at the Area 51 Alien Center tourist attraction and coordinate our entry. If we Naruto run, we can move faster than their bullets. Let's see them aliens. They have an official website now, too. But, okay, you know that it's a joke when it's being hosted by, and this is the name of the account that's hosting it, Shit Posting Cause I'm in Shambles.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't tip you off, I don't know what does. But yeah, they're supposed to stop at this alien center, and on September 20th.
It's called officially Storm Area 51. They can't stop all of us.
Well, okay. So first of all, if you're listening to this and you're interested in this event, for the love of whatever you hold dear, don't go.
Go there and film it.
We are talking about a highly classified federal military, very secret Air Force base where there's like signs posted on the fence around the property that say, you know, if you trespass, we will shoot you. Okay. Right. And if you think that they're not going to respond with potentially lethal force, you are kidding yourself. And okay, sure, if literally 2 million people show up and decided to like run at the base, probably some people would make it pretty far. But, you know, especially these days, do not put it past the federal government to just like shoot you. Okay.
Right.
I have doubts that it'll get beyond people like throwing like a tailgating party or something like near the base. I certainly hope that people don't try and get in because that's going to turn into a tragedy real fast. There's a great, there's an article. It's on the Huffington Post online, but like, I like it because of the headline. Nevada Senator, don't storm Area 51.
Don't storm Area 51.
And the subtitle is, the truth may be out there, but finding it this way is, quote, not safe. Yeah, which seems like good advice. So funny. Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's January of this year, a guy was shot as he tried to speed past the armed guards at the site.
Oh, that's right.
You know, and then they let him on an 8-mile high speed chase.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, here in Ohio, we have lots of train tracks. And every once in a while, we'll see a train go by carrying all sorts of Humvees and, you know, even tanks and stuff have been seen.
Alien specimens, crashed spacecraft, yeah.
Yeah, I won't be surprised if before September comes along, I start seeing some trains heading out west full of white SUVs. Because that's their vehicle of choice right at Area 51.
True. Now, all that said, if you were to go online and, you know, do a search for Storm Area 51, you will find some hilarious ass memes and other things that people have put together. Like there's this one tweet from someone, Lila Toyd, FYB, where she goes, how I'm pulling up to Area 51 versus how I'm leaving Area 51. And on the left is a picture of like a red, like, you know, like Range Rover. And on the right, it's like Boba Fett's spaceship from Star Wars.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Everyone's running away from Area 51 with their, you know, all the laser pistols and their
lightsabers and stuff. There's some pretty hilarious memes and stuff on there, but like seriously, people, don't storm Area 51. You will be, you'll be FUBAR.
I saw another one where there was a military briefing, and you got the sergeant up front or whatever, and he's telling everyone this is what they're going to do. And on the screen, it shows the Naruto run, you know, which is Dragon Ball Z or something.
I'm a little embarrassed to admit, as a big time anime fan, that I do not watch Naruto or Dragon Ball Z. So don't know what a Naruto run is, but it's still obvious to me that if it's something that a superhero in an anime show can do to dodge bullets, you probably can't do it in real life.
Yeah, it's basically that scene, you know, where the two guys are running at each other. And they show the camera from, like, right in front of the guy's face, and he's just running. You see all the speed lines going by, and his arms are held out behind him. That's the Naruto run, and apparently they're unstoppable and incredibly high speed.
You know, hopefully nobody actually believes that. I'm sure probably almost no one does. Anyway, so that's storming Area 51. A lot of weird alien-related things in the news these days. So, okay, so I wanted to mention, before we get to our aliens in fiction section where we talk about movies and things, I just want to make mention of an alien, you know, UFO-related conspiracy theory that I do not believe for one second, but as like an item of interest, of like a concept that I find fascinating that I would love to read about in like a novel or see on a show or something like that. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Black Knight conspiracy. Knight as
not
in
really.
Knight as in K-N-I-G-H-T. So there was this.
Oh, that's the guy from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. None shall pass. I got you now. Black Knight. I'm with you.
Right.
Go ahead.
Except not. But no, what I'm talking about is there is this conspiracy theory that like 13,000 years ago, aliens put this probe in orbit, in like a polar orbit, and it's been, you know, trying to make contact with us ever since. Now, I just find it really fascinating, the concept of an alien probe having been inserted into Earth orbit like thousands and thousands of years ago. I found that to be really fascinating in what it sort of implies about these aliens and all of this stuff. So if there's anybody out there that knows about like a book about this, like, you know, somebody that takes this concept and runs with it in like a really cool sci-fi movie or book or something, please let me know about that.
MegaDragonShow@gmail.com.
I just bring it up because I think it's just, it's like emblematic of the craziness that you get when you're trying to, just kind of how these conspiracy theories like appear and sort of grow and like expand from the most unlikely of like sources, right? So basically in, I think it was like 1923, Nikola Tesla told a newspaper that he found evidence of life on Mars in the form of this like signal that he found and decoded, right? So then like after that, a competing theory arose somehow where they said, no, there's a 13,000-year-old alien artifact in orbit around Earth. And somehow that became known as the Black Knight satellite. And then after that, let's see. So a science fiction author named Duncan Lunan wrote an article for Spaceflight magazine in 1973 that speculated that an object 13,000 years old around the moon could have been responsible for this signal, right? So people glommed on to that. And then in the early 1960s, Time magazine reported an unknown object was discovered to be in polar orbit around the Earth. And so then they kind of combined that. The Department of Defense announced that it had been identified as a piece of the Discoverer satellite. But of course, no, it had to be the 13,000-year-old alien artifact.
Of course.
Right after that, people were skeptical of that. Now, it actually turns out that the government was lying and that it was a part of the United States Corona Project, which is a mission that produced the world's first successful space photo reconnaissance flight. So basically, they were testing spy satellites to monitor like Soviet missile
facilities. Just didn't want to admit it.
Right, right. So, but because of the
fact now, who do we believe?
Right, exactly, right. So, oh, you lied once. Are you lying again? I don't know. So then through the 70s and 80s, it was like kind of this urban myth. And then in 1998, the space shuttle Endeavour was starting to put together the International Space Station. And there was this photo they took of this black object hovering above Earth, you know, in orbit. And then this is the picture that you still see.
Was it rectangular?
It was a funny old irregular shape. And this is the photo that you still see like on the cover of like a bunch of YouTube videos and stuff. We're like, oh, conspiracy of the Black Knight. This is it. Definitive proof. But like they ended up saying, well, no, that's actually like a thermal blanket that got detached from an ISS node and like flew out into space.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, but do you believe them? I think I do.
Yeah.
Actually. But anyways, I just wanted probably to go through that whole crazy history of how this conspiracy theory got started and like gained momentum, because I think it's just emblematic of like the type of thing that you have to watch out for when you're, you know, if you're interested in this topic, and a lot of people are, including me, you know, it's one thing to just like look at the theories and say, oh, that's entertaining. And another thing to be like, well, I'm like hardcore that that's obviously an alien artifact and we need to do something about it. Like you have to be a little bit reasonable.
A little something.
That's all I'm talking about. But I just wanted to bring up because I think the concept is super fascinating, but I also didn't want to feed the fire. And that's why I went through like kind of how that developed. So do you have any thoughts about the Black Knight conspiracy?
Well, it's just like I mentioned, it's like, oh, it's like, who do we trust now? Maybe it was part of a satellite. Maybe it was something we put up there. Maybe they were just trying to cover their own ass. Or maybe they're just like, that's not ours. What is it? Now it's in a bunker in Area 51. And they're saying, oh, yeah, we put that there.
Well,
yeah,
let me ask you this. What if it is actually true? What if there is this artificial satellite in polar orbit around the Earth that aliens put into orbit over 13,000 years ago and initially contacted Nikola Tesla in 1923? I mean, what does that say to you if that's true?
That's people have been getting the anal probes for years. I believe every one of those. Some of the films we've seen, like Fire in the Sky, that's actually a documentary, ladies and gentlemen. That's
well, it's not a documentary, but it's supposedly based on true events.
No, they filmed that. They just happened to catch it when.
Oh right, I see.
No, that wasn't staged.
Snark, snark.
I am the Snark Knight.
You are the Snark Knight. So that's a good segue. Let's talk about our favorite aliens in fiction, or our favorite, you know, movies and shows and books and things with aliens. Why don't you start?
All right. Like I said, it was around the early 90s, late 80s when I started getting into the aliens and stuff, and a lot of that was due to the movie Alien and Predator and, you know, E.T. and all that stuff that came out at that time when Hollywood was really pumping out the alien stuff.
Well, to be fair, there have been alien movies since like the 40s and 50s, at least.
True.
At least, yeah.
But I was not around then.
Yes.
But as I was growing and getting into the curious mindset that would one day make me a complete nerd, that's what was going on. And that's how I kind of got into it. And since then, I've just loved almost any alien movie. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not a really good movie, I just love seeing how they have created the aliens and what makes this alien different and, you know, how they find us and how we find them. And it's just a fantastic culture that I never get tired of.
It's such a fascinating topic, right? I mean, it's like if indeed we could find out that there was life elsewhere in the universe, let alone intelligent technological life, right? That would be probably the biggest discovery in the history of the world. It has so many implications. It would, you know, my God,
it would change life as we know it.
So I'm fascinated by the idea of aliens, and, you know, especially aliens visiting Earth or us visiting other planets. I mean, it's just fascinating. Before we get and talk of more movies, because most of the things I want to talk about are movies, there is this great, great comic series that was published by Vertigo in like 2012 and 2013. It's called Saucer Country, and it's like a super trippy, very interesting UFO mythology series, right? And you can buy it in like two trade paperbacks, which are just like collections of all the individual comics right now. And then actually starting in spring of 2017, they had a sequel miniseries called Saucer State, which I haven't got to read yet. But I'm telling you, if you like graphic novels or comics at all, you got to pick up Saucer Country. It's amazing. It's really, really good. You got to check it out. I'm not going to say that much more about it, but if we're making recommendations about alien related fiction, I mean, you cannot pass that up. The movies you mentioned were very influential for me as a young man. And then so you mentioned Fire in the Sky. And I'll tell you what, that movie freaked me the F out.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite all time alien movies.
That is like
because it is creepy.
It's like a horror thriller. like very real, done in a very realistic style. And frankly, you know, it is supposed to be based on a true story about these firefighter guys, you know, fighting like the wildfires. I think it was in California, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And they are out fighting fires one night and they get abducted.
Travis Bickle?
Yeah, yeah. And they get abducted. And, you know, they all took like polygraphs to prove it. And like, you know, they had all kinds of problems in life. You got to check out that movie, too. Now,
yeah, that's a great one.
In the same vein, and I don't believe that this one is based on a true story at all, but it's a movie that I have not had a chance to watch on Netflix yet. But from all of the reviews that I've seen and just looking at the trailer, it looks like a huge mindfuck of a UFO horror movie. Okay. It's called The Endless, and it was made in 2017 or released in 2017. And the brief description on IMDb reads, as kids, they escaped a UFO death cult. Now, two adult brothers seek answers after an old videotape surfaces and brings them back to where they began. Huh. And I'm telling you, it looks really freaky. So I really want to check that one out. If anybody who's listening to this has seen that, you know, hit us up on social media and tell us what you thought. Other ones that were big for me, The Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's
John Carpenter
classic. I mean, it's actually a remake, but that movie is amazing. I love the John Carpenter version. I mean, the previous version's good, too, but I really am attached to the John Carpenter version. So here's a couple of movies that they're sort of about aliens.
Obviously, on The Thing, we don't want the one that came out, like, what, 7 years ago?
Oh, yeah, that one was crap. I guess, actually, that one's technically a prequel to the John Carpenter Thing movie from the 80s with Kurt Russell in it. But it was okay. It had better, more modern special effects and stuff, but it just wasn't. It didn't pack the same punch to me, for sure. Now, here's two movies that are sort of about aliens that I think are underrated in a way. Cloverfield and 10 Cloverfield Lane, not the third one on Netflix, the Cloverfield Effect, which was kind of not that good. But the first two Cloverfield movies, which are only loosely connected.
Yeah. But yeah, and the third one's like, I couldn't even really see the connection anywhere.
Well, you could say the connection.
They hinted at it.
I mean, the connection is not obvious in any of the movies to each other. But it's kind of like they take place in the same sort of like post alien world, but just in different places at different times.
That's same universe.
That's my reading of it. Yeah. So, but the first two movies though were really good. 10 Cloverfield Lane was like, wow, really good. Actually, both of them are. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, classic.
Mm-hmm.
Contact with Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Not as explicitly about aliens, you know, you don't really see aliens per se, but I thought that was just a really good movie, directed by Robert Zemeckis. Has an amazing director's commentary on it, by the way, on the disc. Do you remember that movie from the 80s? I think it was Jeff Bridges, Starman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's such a classic. I don't know how watchable it would be.
I'd have to see that again
these days.
Yeah, probably didn't age too well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was watching
but
that.
It's the dude, man. It's the dude.
It's the dude. Yeah, that was a good one. So Edge of Tomorrow
is
weirdly a movie that I was not that excited to watch. But like now, I love that movie. And that's one of the few movies that I can just watch over and over again, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
You know, because he had been in that movie Oblivion, Tom Cruise,
mm-hmm.
which came out, I think, just a couple years before Edge of Tomorrow. And
right.
I was a little underwhelmed by that one. There's definitely some cool stuff in it, but like the twist, I saw it coming a mile away.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. Almost every, not just alien movie, but all the sci-fi movies, what they do with technology and what they do with the vehicles and, you know, just the story, it's like, it's cool to imagine that stuff being, you know, real. And that's so great.
Yeah.
Just seeing the different ways they work the aliens and technology in their hypothetical future.
I love to see that stuff. You know, I want to see as many takes on it as I can. Do you remember a movie that was a little bit older, Battle Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the greatest.
It wasn't the greatest.
It's like a fun action movie where Los Angeles is under attack by aliens. Like, You know, it's very, I think you were the one who described it to me initially as it's like Black Hawk Down meets Independence Day. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's in that very gritty, you know, like dark sort of style.
It's a much better version of Starship Troopers.
Well, Starship Troopers is just, and that's another one to mention, but that one's just a totally different movie. And that movie is amazing in its own way. Now, when it first came out, I was not a huge fan of it, but like looking back on it now, I think it's actually a lot smarter than people give it credit for. I think the problem I had with it is that it doesn't really resemble the book that it's supposedly based on very much.
Right.
You know, it really doesn't. But what it is it's a very canny exploration of fascism, actually, with bug-like aliens and lots of like bloody, like 80s, like 90s, sorry, like 90s style, like over the top action. So it's really enjoyable on a number of levels, but I can't compare it in the same way that you were just doing to Battle Los Angeles. Cause to me, it's just,
I was just being silly.
Okay. Well, as you're wont to do, speaking of cerebral movies, there's one called Under the Skin, which starred Scarlett Johansson. Have you heard of that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I watched it a couple times. That one's crazy.
That is very crazy, but it's definitely like an art house film.
Yeah.
So if you like hate...
There's very, very little dialogue. There might be like literally 100 spoken words.
I mean, if you hate artsy-fartsy films, then stay away from it. But
It is so creepy. And some of the scenes, like on the beach, you know, with the family, the husband, wife, and the dog and the baby. It's like some of those scenes are just so intense.
It's very intense.
They
like,
don't do anything low-key, with very little.
Yeah, it's like very intense, low-key, like horror movie in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really want to try and describe it because that's just a rabbit hole we don't need to go down right now because it's really trippy. Yeah. But
the scene at the end, you know, the culmination of everything in the forest there. I mean, the first time I watched that, I was like, holy balls. It was just so cool.
Another one. So this is one of my all-time scariest alien movies that we haven't mentioned so far. The 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
I don't know that I've ever really seen that.
So it stars Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams, Jeff Goldblum, and also I believe Gene Wilder is in it. I could be wrong. Anyhow, point being, that movie scared the crap out of me when I was young. I mean, I watched it when I was probably like 12 or something, which is probably not an appropriate age to watch that movie.
Ah, sure.
But I mean, I had nightmares about that afterwards.
Well, if that's not an appropriate age to watch a movie from the 70s, then I have probably already ruined my son's life.
Right. Just a last couple, too, since we're giving, you know, alien movie recommendations on the lighter side. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Super 8, J.J. Abrams movie that came out several years ago now. And the movie Paul, which is Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah.
Kind of lighter-hearted, you know, silly type of alien movie. But that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any last ones?
Well, it's like, obviously, there's the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Books. That's just a hilarious book. And there's a show, or there's a old British movie, and then there's a newer one. They're all very entertaining. Of course, you have E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Everybody should read the series of books that the television show The Expanse is based on, and also watch The Expanse, because it's probably the best sci-fi show on television right now.
Yeah, another one that I think is highly underrated is District 9.
Oh, District 9 is amazing.
Yeah, that's an incredible movie.
It's a Neil Blomkamp movie,
And I think I heard he's working on another one.
He's always working on another one. He did the promo trailers for that new game, Anthem, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Which is why, you know, the game looks so good when it's not... Also, I will just mention there is a series, there's a trilogy of books by Dennis E. Taylor called, it's the Bobiverse trilogy, about a guy named Bob who becomes like a spaceship, basically. And it is an amazing, it is an amazing three books. So fun, such great science fiction. So I know we could probably go on about this. For
I got
hours.
A couple more. I just want to hit a few that we didn't cover. Some of the more brainy ones, because I love, you know, when they get into the real sciencey explanations of how everything's going to happen.
Hard sci-fi, yeah.
You know, like
do it.
Contact, Interstellar. Interstellar. Those are both fan. Yeah. Interstellar's great. I would hope that if aliens do show up on the planet, it would be more like, you know, The Abyss or Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I hope it's not our first, you know, if we do discover life, it's not like Alien or Predator anything like that.
You're hoping it's positive. And
I'm hoping it's more like Contact, you know?
And less like Alien, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I'd rather see it more like that.
That's fair.
I think I'd be okay with a Mars Attacks scenario.
Okay, sure. That would be cool. That movie is hilarious, though. I totally forgot about that one. Oh, my God. I have to rewatch that. Oh, that's such a good one. Tim Burton movie.
Yep. Cocoon. I watched that a million times growing up. Another terrifying one from the Stephen King universe, The Mist.
Oh, The Mist. The Mist is great.
Remember that one?
Because, you know what? The Mist to me was like a pretty decent Stephen King movie until the end, and then it just became great.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah, that last scene.
But,
just
which we will not
stops
reveal
your heart.
If you haven't seen
it.
Right,
you
got to watch that movie. Great. Okay.
The Arrival. That's another great one.
Yeah. Well,
I love the way they kind of got into language, you know, in that one.
Charlie
and that
Sheen.
Was a cool, cool twist.
Yeah.
No, the one with Amy Adams and Forrest Whitaker.
Oh, yes. Okay. Good. Yeah. Arrival. That was an amazing movie and also one of the best adaptations from a novel that you'll find in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Flight of the Navigator, love that.
Flight of the
up.
Navigator, yes. With a brief appearance from a very young Jessica...
Sarah Jessica Parker.
A very brief appearance from Sarah Jessica Parker in that one.
I always call her Sarica.
Sarica.
Sarica Jessica Parker.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, those are great. And, you know, we could talk about these alien movies and things forever, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, don't forget Battlestar Galactica.
Never saw it.
Come on. Stop. Are you serious right now?
I'm serious. Serious.
You're talking about the newer Battlestar Galactica that was like
2005 or whatever. I'm talking about the whole Battlestar Galactica universe.
You've seen no Battlestar Galactica, period.
None of it. Not any of it.
After this recording, we're going to have a talk. Okay, we're going to have a serious talk.
I can't. I got to watch that Bob Lazar thing. Right. You really got me interested on it.
All right. Well, that's what we'll do. Okay, so we did want to take some time to just let you know. We did just want to let everybody that's listening know some topics that we're going to take on in some future episodes that are coming up here pretty quick. So we're going to do an episode on Spider-Man Far From Home.
Right.
We are going to do, it might be the same episode of Spider-Man or it might be a separate episode. We're going to do the future of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because there's been a lot of news and announcements coming out about what they're going to be doing next.
And why it's terrible.
Yeah, that we may tack that on to the, we're going to do an episode on when the Avengers Endgame home video release happens. So like when the Blu-ray and the DVD come out, we're going to have some further thoughts, you know, looking back and now that we've been able to process it a little bit more, talk about the extras that come with it when you buy it. And also, yeah, I think it'll be appropriate.
And the fantastic re-release footage. That was incredible. Which makes Endgame, of course, now the number one movie
yeah, they
of
beat
all
Avatar.
Time as far as ticket sales.
We're also going to have an episode on Stranger Things, the new season, the third season. And we are going to have the first in a series of episodes on Dungeons & Dragons and other tabletop role-playing games.
Yes, that'll be fun. We'll actually be doing live playthroughs and you'll
be
able to...
Yeah, we have been talking about doing an actual play podcast separate from the Mega Dragon podcast. We'll have more details on that coming up, but...
Since we, real quick, since we talked about it in this alien-themed episode, I think we might have to at least do a segment come September.
Oh, on Storm Area 51.
Storming Area 51 and the potential aftermath.
Yeah.
I hope it's a little more exciting than
Y2K
was.
We'll do a Force Modem Sorry, we'll do a postmortem. we'll do a postmortem on the Storm Area 51 in September that hopefully does not include any actual postmortems.
There's gonna be bodies just littering the ground.
Well, hopefully not. So littering. We are out of time for today. Thank you, everyone, for coming to listen to this episode of Mecha Dragon. We hope to see you next time, and this is Captain Will signing out.
This is Jess, the Dark Nerd, once again thanking you guys as well. Now it's plug time. You can, hopefully, some of you do, send us some of your alien stories. Send us some theories, something you may have stumbled upon, movies we forgot that will blow our minds. We are at Mecha Dragon on Facebook, Mecha Dragon Show at Twitter, and Instagram as well. Hit us up. Tell us everything you know about aliens, why they're good, why they're bad, and why we want them to abduct us. Signing out.
Now, if you enjoyed this episode or any of our other ones, you can support the show by leaving a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts. It actually really helps us out, guys. We'll even read our favorite reviews on the show. It should be lots of fun. So if you can do that, thank you. See you next time. Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0, creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.
Recon plane, they start shooting. They see a flying saucer from another galaxy. They hesitate. You know what happens to most people after seeing a UFO?
They experience missing time.
Any number of soft option kills will do it. Nerve gas, low frequency infrasound beams. Hell, with high powered microwaves, can not only cut enemy communications, it can cook internal organs.
But abductions?
Don't know as much about them. I'm just the pilot. You ever flown a flying saucer? Afterwards, sex seems trite.